Separating the policy from the politics, delving deeper into what is happening in our world today, and sharing the information you may not know if you didn't listen to this show. iHub Radio presents The Lovable Liberal. This is the Anita Rufus Show, civil discourse on current events and politics. Here's Anita.
I don't know about the civil discourse part. I have to think about that for a minute. Right now, it's kind of hard to be civil. There's so much venom out there. Now, for those of you who are scrambling right now trying to figure out how to see me on the camera, we're not doing the camera, so you don't need to worry about it. You can listen to me at iHubRadio.com, and I'm here live. It is October 31st. Happy Halloween. And I will tell you, I am sitting here looking at three bizarre big candles that have been set up here at the desk for Halloween. And they look like scary monsters. Well, all right, they're not that scary. They're candles. I get it. But they're made to look like scary monsters. And I think that mentioning that is the perfect segue into talking about the fact that we're only 3 days from the election. Oh, having been off the air for a few weeks now, I am so overwhelmed with the amount of material that I'd like to get through. But with this election coming up in only 3 days, we won't know the result, but we never do. Think about our local elections here in the Coachella Valley. It takes weeks to get a final count sometimes on a water district seat or a city council's member. What is this? Well, we know what it is. It's the president saying, if I don't know on the night of the election, then everything is not fair. And so my attitude about this is, frankly, what difference does it make how long it takes to get a final result? As long as it's accurate and in time for a peaceful and proper transition of power, who cares how long it takes? The main thing is to know that it's accurate. The amount of early voting going on, this election is going to set records. In fact, I just mentioned this to somebody the other day. I was watching TV and they were covering the early voting people, and the lines were so long. They couldn't even show them all in one news segment because the camera couldn't get that far around corners and around blocks to even see all the people who were lined up. In Texas, the early voting total as of today is already more higher number of voters than voted in the entire 2016 election, early and on the day of the election, and by mail, and however else people voted. Already the early vote has beaten the total turnout in 2016. Early voting has turned out over almost 62% of eligible voters. We don't usually get 62% total turnout in any election. Texas and Hawaii are already at over 100% turnout in the early voting in those two states compared to the total vote in 2016. Montana's at 91.2% of the 2016 vote. Tennessee is at almost 90%. State of Washington, 88%. Now, they vote by mail. New Mexico, 88% already of the total number of people who voted in 2016. And other states with very, very high, all above 80% turnout of early voters compared to the total vote in 2016, Arizona, Florida, Nevada, Oregon, North Carolina, Georgia. This is amazing. And it shows how motivated people are because it's a very important election. And because the point has been made that we couldn't rely on mail getting where it was supposed to be in time, because the president appointed one of his big donor acolytes to run the postal service, and they, you know, we've been seeing all those reports. And the one good piece of news in all of this is that a U.S. district judge ordered that there be measures put in place where election mail processing for completed ballots being returned by voters had to, in fact, be processed. That whatever memo or policy change that DeJoy idiot put out to slow down the mail and slow down the return of mail-in ballots, this judge said, hey, in Alabama, Alaska, Atlanta, Central Pennsylvania, Colorado, Wyoming, Detroit, Fort Worth, Indiana, South Carolina, Louisiana, Mississippi, Northern New England, and Oklahoma, among others, were ordered that measures be put in place where election mail would be processed as first-class mail, and that it be done properly so that those ballots get in spite of whatever DeJoy had told people to do. Now, there have been challenges all over the place. The president's plan, and we've known this for some time because he told us this, president's plan is to invalidate the election if he loses, which I have always found so interesting. Nobody ever really gets him to answer, well, if the election is rigged, if you lose, if you win, was the election rigged? Nobody ever gets him to answer that. That's the most obvious question. And look, he'll either be reelected or he will delegitimize the vote by claiming that all of the mail-in ballots are fraudulent. If he doesn't win the Electoral College, they've already outlined ways that they can throw this to state legislatures. And they can throw it to the Supreme Court. And right now, if they have to go to state legislatures or the Supreme Court, Trump has an advantage because of the way those institutions are currently constituted. But I have to say, although there were a couple of decisions that came out of the Supreme Court that I wasn't real happy with, because the Republicans are already challenging votes and we haven't even counted them. In Nevada, the Trump campaign filed a lawsuit to try and get images of every signature on every mail-in ballot, because they're supposed to check the signature against the legitimate signature to make sure nobody's forging anybody's signature. And the Republicans wanted to get those images so that they could pay a bunch of people to sit around and compare them. In Texas, Republican office holders and candidates sued to have more than 100,000 votes invalidated in the Houston area because they were cast at drive-through voting centers, which the Republicans have asked a judge to declare illegal. You can't drive through and vote. In Minnesota, in Pennsylvania in particular, officials are setting aside any mail-in ballots that arrive after Election Day, even if they were postmarked before, because the courts may decide to go back and look at some of the claims being made about those mail-in ballots. And so they're having to segregate any ballots that come in after Election Day so that those can be separated out and maybe not counted if a judge says you can't count them. And this is what the plan is by the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee. Now, Republicans say they're just trying to make sure the process runs smoothly and that the rules are followed fairly. They're saying the Democrats loosened election rules in ways that could confuse voters or invite fraud. Although even the president's own commission on voter fraud, which he claimed in 2016, they couldn't find anything substantive. And of course, the Democrats are accusing the Republicans of targeting valid Democratic votes, especially in Democratic strongholds in major cities where a lot of the vote is by minorities, people of color. And the presumption is that they're overwhelmingly going to vote for Joe Biden. So we got to get rid of those ballots. The Republicans are the ones bringing these lawsuits to challenge election law and how ballots are going to be counted. In North Carolina, the Supreme Court did the right thing. They upheld the State Board of Elections' effort to ensure that every eligible vote would count. And they're going to be able to count votes all the way up to November 12th if they were sent by the mail and postmarked by Election Day. In Pennsylvania, it's just been a mess. And now you have this new justice that Trump appointed, that the Senate confirmed in record time, Amy Barrett, who joined the court on Tuesday, but she didn't get involved in these latest Supreme Court decisions on these cases because the court members appropriately said she hadn't had time to review all of the filings and all of the pleadings or to be aware of the arguments, and so she was not involved. There are some states where if a ballot is received by election night, it gets counted. Anything that comes in after that does not. There are other states where, in California, I think it's up to 12 or even more days beyond Election Day, assuming that a ballot was postmarked on or before Election Day. That's the way it works. Now, why are the states coming from so many different places? I'm going to tell you in case you don't already know. And I have a suggestion for how to fix all of this, which could in fact be done by Congress. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, and you are listening to iHub Radio. You can get in on the conversation at 760-544-8255. 544-8255, or you can email studio at ihubradio.com. Why are there so many different election laws? Coming up.
She's lovable, she's liberal, and she's here to bring a tone of civility to political discussion you aren't likely to find anywhere else. The Anita Rufus Show, with your lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
And again, I thank you for joining me live Saturdays from noon to 2 here at iHub Radio. So I teased that I was going to talk about something that most of us don't understand, and my suggestion for how to fix it all. Talking about the elections, why are there so many different rules in so many different states, and why are the courts getting involved and deciding who gets to count what by when? So here's the simple version of that. states make election law for their state. The Constitution sets up when a presidential election is supposed to take place. Usually states will jibe their state elections or even local elections around primary dates and around the presidential election date. But the truth is, states and municipalities that have that right to decide on the voting rights for their area, generally for their state, they get to decide. The federal government doesn't tell them what to do about how they run an election, how they count the votes. It just has to be fair. And we presume that the courts will get involved if it turns out that a particular state is discriminating against certain voters. And this is why all this back and forth is going on and why they have to deal with states differently. And in fact, the Supreme Court has already said some states, based on the way their voting rules were set up, cannot count ballots that have not been received by whatever the closing time for the polls is on election date. So that would be Tuesday for most places, 8 o'clock at night, or they stay open until the last person in line gets to vote. Some states, the way the rules were set up, they can wait till after the election date as long as a ballot is postmarked by that time. So they may be counting votes for 3 days, for 5 days, for 12 days, whatever their state election board has decided. Here's where it ends up in the courts and where decisions can be very different because all of the states set their own rules. Let's say, for example, that there is a state elections board that has been set up to put out the rules and to tell every county how they're supposed to conduct elections and what the central collection place is when they get results from all of their precincts, where do they send them in, and how are the totals announced to the public and the press. These are things that state election boards are responsible for, assuming that in most states, that's what they have as the way they've set it up. Well, there are some states where the voting rules have been set up by the state legislature, like a law. This is how we will do it in this state. And you have to get the whole legislature to agree to amending that law or changing that law if you're going to change the way something is done. In some states, the executive branch, the Secretary of State, has fiat over all of the election rules for that state. And I have to tell you, I get it. This is the way we set it up. It, you know, anything that is not a federal government responsibility can be left to the states. Okay, fine. Most of the time, that works out pretty well. And we like having some autonomy in that California has its own way of dealing with things compared to Mississippi or whatever. However, here is my suggestion for how to fix this whole problem. When there is an election that is nationwide and that is for the one office that is not controlled by the states, the presidency, and along with it, the vice presidency, but the presidency of the country, when that's the election we're talking about, not your own senators from your state, not your own representatives from your district, not the people you're going to send to the state legislature, but when it's the presidency, there should be the right for Congress to pass a law about how that election will be conducted in all 50 states and the territories that get their votes counted. That would solve this problem. When it's the federal election, you shouldn't have 50 different or more rules for how it's going to be done and involve the courts and everything. The way to get past that is to have Congress pass an election law to implement the constitutional requirement for a presidential election and let Congress say, you guys can do it how you want in all of your states when it's just your own state offices. But when it's for the presidency, here are the rules, and this is what everybody will be held to. And then we won't have to go through this again. Because if it can happen, then it can happen again. Plus, we have fake websites that have been set up to give you misleading information, and we've got spoofed email addresses, things that are being sent by foreign nations. The FBI is on this. But come on. We shouldn't be having so much of these arguments or the idea that a court's going to tell us who won.
In a land so divided, she's a uniter, not a divider. This is the Anita Rufus Show, featuring the lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
Okay. I've been talking about all these challenges that have been made because Democrats seem to want to expand voting and Republicans seem to want restrictions. They've brought suit in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Wisconsin, Nevada, Texas, Michigan, Minnesota, all these, especially what are known as swing states. And what this brings home to me more than anything else is something I have been telling you ever since I have been on the air, which is all the way back to about 92. It matters who appoints justices to the Supreme Court. If there's anything that should dictate your vote, it should be thinking about that. Of course, I always also said that no one president could destroy the United States in one term, and now I'm beginning to rethink that. But it definitely does make a big difference who gets appointed to the Supreme Court. We saw that with the fact that Brett Kavanaugh, who was appointed by Trump, in one of his opinions when the Supreme Court was looking at Wisconsin's voting rules, Kavanaugh authored here's what happens when Supreme Court makes a decision. All of those who are on one side join in an opinion, but each of them can then write an additional opinion that they want to attach because they may have a different philosophy about how they got to that result or a different idea about another thing that the court should have considered. And those on the losing side can do the same. They usually put out one dissenting opinion, but they can each write their own dissenting opinion, and they often do, and they often have different reasons. Well, in this case, Kavanaugh, for the majority, and the new Justice Barrett wasn't in on this decision, so it was 5-3. And Kavanaugh argued in his concurring opinion that he wrote separately in addition to what he wrote on behalf of the five justices. He wrote that accepting ballots, this is with regard to Wisconsin again, accepting ballots after November 3rd could lead to, and these are his words, could lead to chaos and suspicions of impropriety that can ensue if thousands of absentee ballots flow in after Election Day and potentially flip the results. And this is what a lot of people have been talking about, that what they call the blue wave of mail-in ballots that may come after the red wave of Election Day. People who show up in person may be overwhelmingly Republicans supporting Trump, and that night of election night, it'll look like Trump won. But then when all these absentee and early voting tallies come in, it can switch to a blue wave. And so Kavanaugh, in saying that Wisconsin couldn't put off beyond Election Day counting any ballots, even if they were legitimately sent in and postmarked before Tuesday. He said it could potentially flip the results of an election. Now, Justice Elena Kagan, who was appointed by Barack Obama, she wrote a dissent to that majority opinion that came out of the Supreme Court about Wisconsin. And she said, there are no results to flip until all the valid votes have been counted. The idea that Kavanaugh was basically adopting the argument that Donald Trump was putting out at his campaign stops, if you ever needed to understand why the importance of who is going to appoint Supreme Court justices is so vital to our country because of the role of the Supreme Court and the fact that they all serve for life. This is a perfect example of why that matters, maybe more than anything else. Now, one of the things I've been hearing about with regard to the election on Tuesday is this idea that there will be civil unrest no matter who wins. And I've been thinking about that. If Joe Biden wins, the left certainly wouldn't need to be out there demonstrating. They'd be out there celebrating. So who might be demonstrating in a way that would be creating a hostile environment and potential violence? Because there has been, in the past few months, an upward movement in the number of Americans, both Republicans and Democrats, who have said they think violence would be justified if their side loses. And we already have seen a lot of cases where apparently overly avid protesters on the left have broken windows and done some looting, which is certainly not appropriate. But unhappy individuals on the right have been showing up at demonstrations or state capitals or just out in the street outside a Biden rally or outside a Black Lives Matter protest. They've been showing up armed. And many are now seeing the probability, not just the possibility, of civil unrest after the election. We're having huge fights over racism, abortion rights, the election itself, the virus, over policing standards. We're getting misinformation thrown at us from left and right, mostly from the right in my view. And everyone from Facebook to YouTube to the U.S. military is already taking perhaps very appropriate precautions for what might be civil unrest after the election. It depends not just on who wins or loses. I was thinking about the grace of Al Gore after the 2000 election when the Supreme Court decided that George W. Bush would be president, that recounting in the state of Florida had to stop, and they overruled the Florida State Supreme Court and made the decision that by 500 votes or 52 votes or however many it was, that George W. Bush would be proclaimed president. And the Supreme Court in that opinion said at the time, you can't use this as a precedent for anything else. This is a one-shot only thing, and we're doing it to try and keep peace in the country. And I still remember the grace with which Al Gore accepted that and stopped any further incursions on accepting the fact that George W. Bush would be inaugurated as president. No matter what you may think of Al Gore before or after that time, that should be remembered as the kind of standard that we expect from those who seek the Oval Office. That kind of grace, that kind of poise, that kind of patriotism. Meanwhile, in Minnesota, they're hiring armed guards for polling places. There was a Minnesota company accused of recruiting armed guards. And the Minnesota Attorney General came out with a statement saying no one may interfere with or intimidate a voter at a polling place, and no one may operate private armed forces in our state. The law is also very clear. No one may interfere with or intimidate a voter at a polling place. People are not supposed to even wear MAGA hats while they're waiting in line to vote. That's considered electioneering. You're not supposed to wear a t-shirt with Biden's name on it or hold up signs for your local city council member. No electioneering at a polling place. And there are usually rules in place about how far away from the polling place you can station yourself. If what you want to do is electioneer, you got to be pretty far away from the polling place in order to do that. So why on earth would the Republicans not trust their own leadership enough to say, we want everybody to vote, whatever the result is, and whenever it's considered final, we will accept it and we will move forward? But you've got a president who has never been above 50% since he was elected. Never been above 50% approval. Now, there have been above 50% approval of some of his policies, which I might add, almost all of which, the ones who, that have been approved, like economic tax cuts, stuff like that. He didn't do those. Congress did those, and he signed off. In some cases, he did take part in some of the negotiation, but they're not his. Suppressing votes may be the only way that he can win. In Philadelphia, his campaign is videotaping voters as they return ballots. In Nevada, his campaign is suing to force election officials to examine ballot signatures closer than they do now. And I believe they already go through two separate layers of people comparing signatures. They sued to prevent the expanded use of ballot drop boxes in Ohio. They sued to shoot down an attempt to expand absentee ballot access in New Hampshire. They tried to intervene against a lawsuit that was brought by members of the Navajo Nation in Arizona because they have such egregious mail delays that they wanted to make sure that ballots that were received from reservations after Election Day but that had been posted before Election Day would be counted. And the Republicans got involved in saying, oh no, shouldn't do that. Former chair of the Federal Election Commission, who in fact served as general counsel to the John McCain campaign, Republican. He said, it is completely unprecedented, a concerted national Republican effort across the country in every one of the states that has had a legal battle to make it harder for people to vote. This has been an unrelenting Republican attack on making it easier to vote. They should be ashamed. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. 3 days and this insanity will just be beginning.
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about the President of the United States, because part of what is coming up in this election, quite appropriately, is whether or not we want to rehire this man as president for four more years, and how he has run his government, and he does think of it as his government, not ours. How he has run his government should be one of the things that we look at to see whether or not we want to rehire him, or whether the person running against him, former Vice President Joe Biden, would be a better choice for the ways in which we need the government to work. And outside of trade and immigration and his personal war against what he calls the deep state, Trump has let many of his cabinet secretaries work without much interruption, let alone direction. He's had personnel changes that I believe go beyond any president in recent memory, because he demands loyalty. And if somebody speaks out differently than he would, or says something that contradicts something he has said, he'll get rid of them. And he loves having people in acting positions, because it means that they really want the job full time, and therefore they have to make him happy. And we've seen the result of that in a lot of areas. But the agencies that are run by the cabinet secretaries, they've been just kind of perking along. And for the most part, things like education or housing and urban development or transportation, they've escaped much notice for the president, because they haven't come up on Fox News as doing anything that's getting any publicity. So he doesn't really pay attention. The oil, natural gas, and coal industries are all struggling right now because of market conditions. Even though Trump said he was going to support all of them, and he keeps talking about how we're energy independent and coal has come back, and it's just not true. Despite the presidency, markets control commodities, and the markets have been changing. On climate change, the Trump administration has repealed dozens of environmental regulations, and they don't even talk about climate change on any of the governmental websites, a subject that young people in this country care about deeply, in coordination with young people all over the planet. On health care, the failure to control or even to really effectively manage the coronavirus will be Trump's lasting legacy when it comes to health care. But they have also tried to censor statements by the Centers for Disease Control and the Food and Drug Administration, because how dare anyone from those science-based agencies, how dare they contradict what the president says, including that you should inject yourself with bleach. His trade policies, there is incremental change, perhaps improvement on NAFTA with the new agreement that he had done with China, with Canada and Mexico, but it's basically the same agreement. He got to call it something else. He got a few concessions. He's flailed on his China policy when it comes to trade. Our people have been hurt by his so-called trade war with China, and he hasn't won that war. He did make good on his pledges to cut taxes and regulations, and that did help to create some jobs, but it never got to the level of economic growth that he promised. On foreign policy, he has definitely changed the role that we play in the world, and he has certainly changed the way the world views us. I believe to our detriment. But if he's reelected, there's already talk about who he's going to get rid of. Director of the FBI, Chris Wray, he came out and said some things that Trump didn't like. CIA Director Gina Haspel, Defense Secretary Mark Esper, they're almost certainly on the chopping block in a second term. President has never been impressed with Betsy DeVos, his education secretary. I don't know why not. She toes the line that he ought to be happy about. But he doesn't do well with women, especially smart women. And of course, he's already been venting about Bill Barr, his unfortunately very loyal attorney general, who is supposed to be representing the interests of the people of the United States, not acting as the president's lawyer. Federal agencies have really been operating at warp speed to get rid of regulations. The president's reelection is in doubt, and cabinet departments have been scrambling to finish dozens of new rules. One of them, I don't know if you remember this, but the trucking industry got a lot of negative feedback, because truck drivers were driving way too long. And they were tired, and they were having accidents. And so a regulation was put through that they could only drive a certain number of hours before they had to stop and take some time to get some rest before they hit the road again. And the Trump administration got rid of that. Come on. Truckers are tough. They don't need to get any rest. The rules about how to classify independent contractors versus employees, which is a big issue even here in California on our ballot this year. The Trump administration has removed regulations allowing railroads to move highly flammable liquefied natural gas on freight trains. Like, how could that possibly turn into anything that might backfire, pun intended? Now they're targeting corporations that have government contracts that have the gall to want to increase their diversity hiring because they've been too lax about it in the past. It's not the same thing as affirmative action. It is the same thing as paying attention to the fact that the employees in your company ought to at least reflect the employment pool in wherever you're located. Civil rights is not a big thing for this administration, clearly. And now Trump is saying, well, civil service protections, people in agencies that are nonpartisan, they're getting too much protection.